Welcome to Your Right to Speak, discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 29, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we'll be talking about violence against women with my lovely colleague and dear friend, Mafo. I'm really excited to be talking about this. I think it's a very important topic to be talking about. Mafo, would you kind of like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me. So my name is Mafo, and like Salvatore mentioned, we work together at a youth organization. However, I do have a very keen interest working with women suffering or surviving violence. A background, I guess I would say I'm from Zambia, so that's a country in the southern part of Africa. Born and raised there, and I have been in Canada for about 4 years now. And Canada is doing me great.
Well, thanks for being on the show today. I'm really excited for this topic. Yeah. I think it's very important to talk about.
Absolutely.
We're just going to dive into it, like I do with all my guests. what are some of the gaps in services offered to women part of this community, and how can we make these services better?
I feel like to begin, you know, talking about the gaps in services, there's constantly gaps in sort of like any type of service system or whatever, what have you. So I think I'm going to narrow it down to the shelter system. Mm-hmm. And how they support women suffering violence or surviving violence. And as much as it's an amazing service, there's definitely gaps there. So even just starting from, you know, the framework that they use in terms of how they support these clients or women, you know, we come in talking about, you know, we're going to use an anti-oppressive framework, but, you know, when a, you know, marginalized woman comes in talking about, well, you know, I'm running away from my husband or boyfriend and I have three kids, you know, it's a matter of either her or someone else that maybe doesn't even have any kids or has one kid and is not from the marginalized community. Mm-hmm. And so it's very the discourse just, you know, surrounding who gets services or who is, who can actually, who's the best person, like, or who deserves to get the service? Like, come
right.
on. It's like there's a scale. It's almost like the Elizabeth Poor laws that pretty much had the scale of, like, who's the deserving poor, who's the undeserving poor. And so it's almost, I kind of feel like the shelter system has this, like, these check boxes or whatever that people have to check out, and, you know, what's their background, where exactly do they live, what's the how severe is their the case or what have you. But I say all this to say that I've come in contact with a couple of women that have mentioned to me that, you know, they haven't gotten services either because when they were talking over the phone, they had an accent, you know, and
oh, wow.
So they kind of feel like, whoa, is it because, you know, because of my accent that I didn't get it, you know, because they understand the different oppressions that they face, you know, one being a woman, one being a part of a marginalized community. So that's one, the framework in which that these services are being offered in the shelter system. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, once they do get into the shelter system, you know, what's being done for them in there? You know, is it just, well, you know, this is just a safe haven for you? Yeah, sure, that's one reason. But how are we, you know, targeting or like focusing on what the issue is here? You know, the violence that they're suffering. Why are they suffering this violence? Why are they here? Why are they choosing to come here now? You know, what stopped them from coming before? Mm-hmm. You know, and just like the different sort of like the intergenerational traumas that maybe they have faced or that they're going to be putting onto their children. You know, are we focusing on the children as well? Are we just focusing on the moment and making sure that, you know, they're just safer now? What about, you know, the issues that they're facing with, you know, mental health? What about the issues that they're facing with maybe even just, you know, childcare, you know, being able to support themselves, food insecurity, you know, in the community as well. And also just that financial independence as a woman.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I just want to unpack some of this stuff because I think you said some really interesting points that in these first 5 minutes I'm just learning. So it sounds like to me, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that how the shelter system is set up is really kind of like that scale or criteria type of system where if they don't fall within a certain criteria, then services won't be offered to these women.
Yeah, services right? won't be offered
really?
Or it won't be offered in as much detail or as much care as if they were another type of woman.
Right. I mean, my time in working in a bit of shelters, I have noticed a bit of that gap with kids as well. And, you know, it always baffles me because, you know, we work with various communities and there's various needs and different contexts that we need to take into consideration as workers, as frontline workers. But in the systemic level, it doesn't seem to be taking that into consideration. It's that, you know, you have to meet a certain criteria, and if you don't, you're not going to get those services. And to me, it sounds like there's, you know, speaking with this population specifically, there's a lot of women who may need the services, but are not getting it because they're not meeting a certain, you know, check off the box, right? That to me is kind of mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
And for me, it's something who's very, you know, someone who's very policy-oriented, as you've come to know about me. it's something that does need to change because, you know, in our training as working as, you know, social workers or CYWs, we are trained that we have to take different contexts, you know,
into consideration.
But if the system's not allowing that, how can we really do that, our work effectively as frontline workers?
Exactly.
Right.
How are we meant to do our work exactly properly? And it just really, you know, I mean, you kind of mentioned you've worked in shelters or the work that you've done in shelters. I actually work in a shelter part time. And it's amazing. I love it. It's one of the best ones. And I would say even just, you know, maybe analyzing that shelter and like the different challenges that we have, I would say the main thing with that particular shelter is that they are long wait lists, right?
Right.
So that's another gap in the service. So why are they long wait lists? There's not enough, you know, shelters out there then.
Right. And it's not to say that that's your shelter has caused that issue.
No.
It's a more of a broader, you know, systemic.
Exactly.
Yeah, huge issue because, you know, even in any type of shelter or in a majority of shelters, there are those wait lists. And to me, that tells me we need more funding. The government needs to give us more funding.
It goes completely back to funding.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, it's not, you know, your shelter doing this. It's the result of the whole, you know, systemic issue that there's not enough funding to have those issues, to open up more shelters, to kind of decrease the wait list, right? And, you know, I know there's a lot of social workers out there who need jobs, right? So I don't think it's, you know, that there's not enough social workers or CYWs out there. There are.
Absolutely.
It's just the government needs to have a bit more of a focus and, you know,
yeah, I like that.
Find
that
the funding.
Focus,
yeah.
Right? Because, you know, they're all over the place. You know, they're talking about doing this, doing that, doing ABC and XYZ. But what's, like, what does the community really need? Let's focus. Like, let's have a laser focus. What are our MPPs doing? What are our, you know, mayors and, like, city councilors doing, you know? Like, are they bringing this stuff to the table and saying this is what the community is saying? Right? Or is it because, you know, again, we're a vulnerable group as women, and then to top it all off, we are experiencing many forms of violence, making us even more vulnerable.
So and traumatized.
Exactly, right? So just all of these things on top of us,
right.
And there's nowhere for us to go, right?
You mentioned the anti-oppressive framework. which is one of my things.
Yes.
And you said a few things, and I don't know how to word this question, but would you find that newcomers have more of a difficult time getting services because they are newcomers?
Yes. They sure do. And it kind of is, it's kind of set up that way even with the system because, oh, you know, you can't access. So like earlier today, I'm trying to help someone, you know, get into, you know, an apprenticeship program. But, oh, he doesn't have a SIN card or, right. you know, so he won't be able to get it. So it's set up in a way that you have to have some form of like Canadian status or have to have been here for a certain amount of time in order for you to access services. And even if it's pretty good if you actually know about those services. So we're looking at newcomers that have no idea these services actually exist, right? So that information is, there's a gap in information sharing. And then even with the ones that have the information, actually having someone to take the time, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of social workers out there that do want jobs or that are looking to get to work. But because of funding, you know, certain organizations will hire a certain amount of workers and those workers get burnt out because of the amount that's right. on their plate. And so to help a newcomer to do A, B, C, and X, Y, Z would take, you know, maybe a month. But, you know, because of the caseload that we have, we'll probably work with the client for maybe 2 weeks or a week and a half just so we can see other people. And so we're doing them a disservice because they're not receiving the utmost services right. that they should be receiving. And it's just, yeah, so the barrier is just like, well, so you're a newcomer or do you have your status or any of that stuff? And that also just really kind of gives room to knowing how much you can access and how much you can't access, right?
So I want to open up a whole, hopefully not a big can of worms.
Yeah.
But... So those are policy issues right there, and I think that's a whole other podcast in itself, to be honest.
Right.
Let me ask another question that's going to be a whole other podcast in itself. But do you think specifically sometimes there is some, disregarding like the SIN issue, you know, kind of discrimination within, you know, the services offered to violence against women for certain marginalized populations? For them not to get services.
Oh yeah, I definitely, like even in the beginning of the podcast, I kind of mentioned how, you know, marginalized women. So I would point out, you know, perhaps Black women.
Right.
You know, they are probably not going to access the same services that another ethnic background group would access. And even just not talking about marginalized, but indigenous women, you know, they're not marginalized. This is their land. You know, they also have trouble accessing certain services, right? So maybe, and I don't know why this still is, because they should get everything like top notch, right? Because we're settlers.
This is their country.
Yeah, we're all settlers, unless you're indigenous, right? So even with those women, you know, the violence that they've experienced, they're not getting any help from anyone in the system, you know. The justice system is not helping at all. Right. So, you know, even
and adding on intergenerational trauma on top of that.
Exactly, right? And just like the government isn't helping at all. I mean, they're going to flash a couple of dollars here and there. But they're not really listening to what, you know, the community is saying, how they want to be, I guess, addressed or the different services that they would like, right? Mm-hmm. So there's definitely gaps there as well. And it's quite sad. So definitely different marginalized populations, are experiencing less service.
Right. You mentioned Black women, and, you know, I just wonder if it's kind of that stereotype of the mad Black woman and, you know, going, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Right? And it's, you know, kind of, you know, as a white worker, you know, thinking,
don't know if I can handle that.
Right. Yeah. They're that mad black woman, and I don't know if I want to bring them into, you know, this space.
Right. Right. Because everyone's so happy here. Everyone comes from like a really great background. So everyone in the shelter is amazing. But then once we bring in the black woman, you know, she's just going to stir things up because, you know, she's the only one with issues, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is definitely the aspect of like the mad black woman or whatever. And it's something that is not, it's not looked into enough. It's just, it's almost something that, it's almost an internalized oppression even with the community. Because we've heard about it so many times, oh, mad black woman and blah, blah, blah. And so the moment something happens, you kind of, that's the first reaction that you have because that's what people have labeled you as, mad black woman. So anything happens, you know, my CAS gets called on my kids or whatever, and, you know, maybe it's just like a regular visit, you know, just a check-in or whatever, assessment, and you go crazy because you're like, oh God, what's happening, you know, and this is what's expected of me, even if in your mind and your personality and your character, that's not you, but because it keeps on being placed on you as like a label of like, oh, this is who you are. Then you begin to act up and, you know.
Right. It's kind of, what's that term? Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's, yes. That's a better term for it. Yeah. Yep.
I just want to change the focus just a little bit and talk internationally. What do you think are some of the similarities and differences between services offered internationally and here in Canada or here in Ontario, since your experience is here in Ontario?
Exactly. So I would say the differences and similarities are that... So I would say the differences in, you know, some of the work that's done here and internationally, I would say the only context I would give is Zambia, because that's where I'm from. You know, the advocacy piece is very different because as much as, you know, we still have a long way to go, as you know, Ontario or people in Canada, it's definitely better than back home in Zambia. So on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10 in terms of, you know, 1 being, you know, the least that you can do in terms of advocacy and 10 being the most, I'd say Canada would be at about like a 6, right? And Zambia would probably be at like a 3, and that's because there's like a lack of training in terms of even just like the social service sector, and even a lack of training within the system. So like even the police don't know how to deal with you know, domestic violence issues, you know, whereas here, you know, there's an understanding that, you know, we've been called as the police, and so we're going to report this, you know, whether it's we go to a house that's, you know, it's a black house, an indigenous house, a Spanish house, a white house, whatever, we're going to report it because you call this. Whereas back home, you know, it's just, well, you know, we call the police and the police will say, you know, just stay with, this is a matter that should be sorted out between you guys. You know, he hit you, that's okay. You know, what did you do? You know, they'll ask you something like that, right? So there's not a lot of advocacy there. Whereas here, I would say, you know, maybe also because of the training and just like how much further you've gone in terms of, you know, tackling different oppressions, I think it's definitely better. And then some similarities, I would say, the need. It's everywhere, right? I would say that's everywhere for sure. You know, I would say if I'm comparing issues of job insecurity, you know, there's a difference there. But with the need on, you know, like services for women experiencing violence, then there's definitely, that's a complete similarity right there. Like literally all over in the world, it may take different shapes, different forms.
Right.
But the need is as much here as it is as much there for services to be given to this particular group. I would say one of the differences in the need, or like the different types of forms of violence, especially looking at Zambia, is, you know, child marriages back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really big there, and it's sort of like a form of prestige for the women's families, or the girls' families.
Right.
I shouldn't even call them women. They're like 11, 12 years old, and they're being married off, and that's just like, that's not okay.
Yeah, you know?
Like,
yeah.
That's a child with a 50-something-year-old man, right? And
Is that embedded in culture?
Culture, yeah. It's definitely cultural.
Right.
And that's something that we're trying to sort of like dismantle, the different sort of like cultural systems,
right,
that we've been following as a country, you know, because it's,
right,
it's something that we should definitely...
I mean, early on in my advocacy career, you know, mm-hmm, that's one of the pieces I learned, was that, you know, internationally there are various issues. However, there are cultural pieces sometimes attached,
mm-hmm,
to some of the issues. So it, for me, it's a very delicate situation, because,
mm-hmm,
I can't go to Zambia and be like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Cause,
yeah.
Right? Who am I? And that's like someone coming to me, you know, and saying, you're Italian and your whole culture is wrong. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's essentially what I would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned, and I remember a guest speaker that I had at Humber was saying, mm-hmm, that it's kind of, in a sense, working within the culture. So this guest speaker was working with women,
mm-hmm,
actually, who were, you know, against violence and child marriage. And she,
mm-hmm,
said in that village, the men were in control and the men had the power.
Mm.
So her tactic was, I'm going to work with the men.
Absolutely. Right.
Because you change that mindset,
mm-hmm,
then everything else is going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It would also have put the women in a position that they could have been, you know, further traumatized,
mm-hmm,
and had further, you know, issues, right? So I think it's an important piece that, although, you know, child marriage is wrong,
mm-hmm,
there's that cultural piece that, you know, here in Canada, and I don't want any of the listeners to say, okay, I'm going to go to Zambia and fix them, because you can't do that.
No.
You can't. You got to work within that culture.
Absolutely.
And there's certain unwritten rules of the culture.
Absolutely.
That you have to understand
before you
make those changes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with the, the person that you were talking about,
mm-hmm,
your previous speaker. You know, I work for an organization that, this is in Zambia, we worked with youth in the rural areas of the country. So we would go down deep into the rural areas, you know, and camp out with some kids, you know, have some girls over, have some boys over. And we had a girls empowerment program that,
mm-hmm,
we would always, you know, like push for, and, you know, let these girls, like, teach these girls, you know, like non-cognitive sort of like life skills, you know, like just taking,
mm-hmm,
them away from like that classroom setting to just actually gain, you know, like very transferable information that they could put into you know, their everyday life. And We sat down and we thought, well, we're teaching them, you know, that they should get an education, but when they go back home, their parents are still gonna,
right,
send them to, you know, this man or this boy or whoever it is. So what if we speak to the parents? We tried that. It was a little bit, you know, touch and go here and there, because they're like, well, we do need to make a living somehow.
Yeah.
My child's going to bring me, you know, X amount of cows,
right,
or sheep,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah,
right? And then we thought, well, then if we can't tackle the minds of, you know, the older generation, because they're way in there, maybe we should tackle the same age group of the girls, but the boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing. So we sat down and actually began to develop a boys empowerment program, which also focused on, you know, you guys should focus on your education and not think that, you know, getting married to, you know, whoever, a young girl, is like the ultimate thing to do or whatever. So that really did prove fruitful, because their mindset kind of slowly began to change, because it takes a lot.
Right.
It takes a lot of work, and it actually it was really helpful to just sort of like switch the perspective, and just like also that culture aspect, understanding that we're not going to be able to get it in the minds of the older ones. Mm-hmm. We decided to go back and, you know, like try the same age group but a different population, being the boys. So yeah,
we're running out of time, and I gotta ask two important questions. The advocacy one, which has mm-hmm. become my trademark question, but before I get to that piece, one of the gaps that I've noticed, mm-hmm. you know, as a male, is mm-hmm. that understandably, a lot of women shelters don't hire male staff.
Yes.
And I actually work at a girls' shelter. I am the only male staff there, and you know, I found that a bit refreshing, because mm-hmm. although I get that piece of not hiring on a male staff, mm-hmm. I think it's important to get male allies and show the women and the girls that mm-hmm. you can build positive relationships with men.
Right? Exactly. Yeah.
So you agree completely?
Yes. That sounds, it's so interesting, because it's something that I've been thinking about, you know, and just like, wow, you know, how are they then supposed to, again, build that relationship and have actual male role models, to say the least. You're right. I think it's something that we could tap into, you know, and just actually ensuring that there's no form of like recurring vicarious trauma, right, or whatever, with like having a man sort of in their safe space. But I mean, that's the world out there, right?
And that's the thing. It's that once they transition out of the shelter,
yeah,
they're not going to be
with just
women, right? So yeah. I think it's important to get some male staff, because you're slowly teaching them that mm-hmm. if you are going to be triggered, how do you do that?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you handle that? Mm-hmm. Because if you go into the real world mm-hmm. and you're triggered, and let's face it, you know, there is a gender gap with mm-hmm. jobs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of male on staff, let's mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. How are you going to, you need to have those skills to function outside mm-hmm. of the shelter. Mm-hmm. And although I do think an important piece, and I think you've learned this about me, is I'm very approachable. I have that very approachable personality.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's an important piece for mm-hmm. males that are going to be in women's shelters.
Absolutely.
You can't have a male who is going to be authoritative and have that stern, you know, they have to be approachable, right?
Exactly,
because
yeah.
in that case, then we will be re-traumatizing exactly. the women and girls.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I really hate to cut this conversation short because I'm enjoying it so much. I do have to ask you the last question that, like I said, has become my trademark.
Yes.
What does advocacy mean to you?
Oh, this is a good one. This is a big one. Advocacy for me, I would say advocacy is, it's such a huge thing for me. It's so big. It can't just be the one thing that you're like, oh, you know, it just means, you know, speaking on behalf of someone else mm-hmm. or whatever. But being able to, again, ensure that you, have this sort of like mindset of how everything works in a systemic way, and ensuring that I'm able to, at the political level, you know, being able to, you know, speak to whoever is in charge of the ward that I live in, and just being able to say, well, you know, this is where I work, this is the community that I live in. This is what the community is saying. What are you guys doing about it? Do you guys need a hand? I can help with that. Do you guys need people to come in and actually see that actually want this done? I can help with that. You know, and also even at an economic level, and just ensuring that I know there's jobs out there, but how come people are not getting those jobs? Where should I take this mm-hmm. this information? Like, you know, where's the information? I want to grab it, and I actually want to give it to the community, you know. So in a nutshell, for me, advocacy is being able to it's being able to, I guess, do what other people can't do.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, not taking away their voice, right? And ensuring that their voice is being heard. Doesn't mean I'm the one who's speaking. Maybe I'm just saying, here's the platform. You speak, or you say exactly what you want to say. So just to sum it all up, being able to be in a position to help, and also, you know, providing that platform for individuals.
Well, Mafo, as always, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. Before we end off, would you like to say anything else?
No, this has been a really, really great and refreshing opportunity. It's really helped me to reflect, and I really urge everyone to constantly reflect on whatever issues you guys are talking about on here. And just see how they can be of help, you know, reach out to you if they need anything, reach out to me. You can get my information from Salvatore.
Yep.
If you guys have any more questions or, you know, yeah.
Well, thank you again, Mafo.
Thank you.
Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what you think we should be talking about on the show, or would like to be a guest, I'm always looking for guests, you can email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.